Just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about death, existentialism, time travel, doppelgangers, the whole shebang. You guys know the drill at this point. So if you're not in the right headspace for some heavy content, maybe just skip this episode. Ooh, you know me.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. I'm Sam.
And I am Nikki, and I think this is part 8 of our discussion on Waltz of the 101st Light Porn.
It's a lot of parts.
It's a lot of parts. There's a shit ton to say about this song, though, so, you know, it's sort of necessary.
We're still going. We're still talking about all of the things. Last episode, we finished talking. I don't think we can ever say this is finished. But we concluded momentarily our discussion of the New Highland Light Infantry. We have two verses left. That's it.
Two verses left. And we're going to do that shit in this one episode. There will not be 9 episodes of Waltz. I feel like I have to like consciously shift my energy a bit right now because I still have like adrenaline coursing through my veins because the World Cup just happened.
Yeah.
And I don't care about soccer normally, but I watched all of the, like most of the games, at least the final ones in this go through because my partner David is a big Argentina fan, as is his whole family, because he's Argentinian. And Argentina just won, and so that was very stressful, but go Argentina.
Yeah.
Okay, back to Joanna. Okay, so Sam, I will leave it to you to read.
I was going to say I'm coming down a similar-ish adrenaline high, but only because I was listening to you, and I don't... As part of the process of getting ready for these episodes, I don't always listen to the entire album before we record. I do usually listen to the song right before we record so that I can have it fresh in my brain. Yeah. But I was texting Nikki right before we recorded, and I'm home alone and have only been playing the entirety of the Divers album on repeat. I was just texting Nikki like, you know what's a sick album? You know what's so fucking good? Divers.
It's Divers,
great.
Man. Yeah, it's so good. And then when I like joined the Zoom call, the first thing I hear is just like Divers, like the title track playing in the background, and Sam was just like vibing,
rocking like, back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. We are so blessed and lucky to have Joanna to be in the same multiverse as Joanna Newsom is an absolute blessing.
I feel like it's a snow day in Vancouver, which is very rare too. And I feel like weather plays a lot into her music, but also like, I don't know. I think Divers is a winter album for me. So like listening to the title track while it's snowing is just like especially magical. So
Divers,
here's your reminder.
Does feel wintery.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know if we categorize that. Let me look at our list.
Because seasons were...
Maybe songs are seasons. Leaving the City is spring we had. Sepiconic is winter.
Yeah, right.
Anecdotes
that's
is
right.
winter.
That's right.
I don't know.
And then we stopped thinking about seasons after
then
that.
We stopped, yeah. We left that in the dust. But here's your reminder. Listen to the album if you're not.
It's a real good one.
10 out of 10.
Okay, yeah. I will leave this... first verse for you to read, Sam, if that is okay with you.
Okay, so this is the second last verse of the song. And she sings. Make it stop, my love. We were wrong to try. Never saw what we could unravel in traveling light or how the trip debrides like a stack of slides. All we saw was that time is taller than space is wide.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So just when her like plea Make It Stop, My Love is so fucking heartbreaking. Like, what a moving line. I don't know. Just like,
yeah,
the idea that she's like begging him to make it stop, even though it's too late, I think. At least that's the impression that I get, is just like, ugh, devastating.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of emotion in this verse. It's very much like we tried something that we had a bad feeling about that we knew was probably doomed, and that feeling was correct. Like, we knew that we couldn't change anything. And I mean, in terms of time travel, like, I'm assuming this is like, you know, we tried to go back and change things. We tried to make whatever we talked about in earlier episodes stop. I don't even remember what the fuck we said it was, but like, we tried to stop this war from coming, or we tried to stop A, B, and C from happening. But by doing that, we set other things in motion, and now everything is unraveling. And not only are we not together, but like, the world is imploding around us. And it's just like very regretful and sad. Yeah. And just kind of like, ah, shit.
Ah, shit.
Yeah.
And like, we made a mistake, like a really bad one.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
like, given that, so if I'm understanding, or if my interpretation of the album, I guess, has any legs to stand on, I think that sort of a central part of it is providing an answer-ish to the question-ish of, like, what is this all for? What is life all for? And, like, what makes it worth it? Because there's, like, a lot of pain. And I think that, like, especially in Time as a Symptom, I take her to be saying it's, like, the joy of life. Like, that is what it's all about. That's what makes it okay to have to do this over and over and over again. And so I find that interpretation, if I use that to like inform my understanding of this verse, it to me is particularly devastating, because it's almost like this acknowledgement that like, we missed the point of life, and now we're stuck, not able to like enjoy each other. We're stuck being apart, even though like the whole meaning of life, the whole reason this, any of this is worth it, is like the very thing that we're missing now because we were greedy.
And all these steps that we took were to try to get closer together, but the opposite ended up happening. And now it's the end. Shit's on fire. The planet is crashing, whatever. Everything's unraveling. And we can't find each other. Like, all of these dimensions, there's no way. We talked about all the different ways you could find each other across space, across time, across like all the different layers of that. What did we even call it? Like a stack of paper? I forget what analogy we used before, but like, there's, it's too late. There's no way to find each other.
Yeah.
And exactly what you said, that joy is missing. And was it all worth it? No.
Not if we don't get to like love each other and enjoy each other. And like, I think it was their greed of like trying to colonize the different iterations of Earth, like given the multiverse stuff, that made it so that they're apart. And so like, the wanting more, more, more is the very thing that like robs you of the ability to like, to do the one thing that matters. It just,
they lost focus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's such specific language to make it stop. So I'm thinking of the verse ahead of time, the verse ahead of us, which was, I think what we had assumed was the New Highland Light Infantry storming wherever our narrator was and looking for the partner. And I feel like this arrival of the New Highland Light Infantry is what she's saying, make it stop. Like, their coming is like the realization of reality. It's like their arrival is like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Like,
not only have we been doing this, but other people have been doing this. And now this entire web is so complicated that there's no way to go back. And I love the use of the word unravel so much.
Yeah, me too. That's so good.
It makes me think of like about black holes and spaghettification and like all these different like knit layers of the web, like So cool.
Super cool. Wait, so just going back to what you said for a month, like I've been sort of looking at this verse. Okay, so because the next verse starts with that's why we got bound to a desert island, I've been trying to sort of look in this verse for an explanation as to what she's referring to when she says that's why we're bound to this island now. And I think it has to have something to do with the fact that time travel is no longer possible, yeah, at agreed. Least in my interpretation. Okay, so yeah. So we have to look to what comes before for what would make it so that time travel is no longer possible for our narrator. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're right, that it has to have something to do with the New Highland Light infantry storming in, because I don't know what else she would be referring to in that's like the big event that happens,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and I think that island also refers to – so I think that that's the first step, right, that the New Highland Light infantry come in, and then something changes that makes time travel impossible. Either it's like an intentional, oh, we can't do this anymore. Like this is too much, or something unravels to the point where it's not possible.
Yeah.
And the conclusion of that is that we're stuck. We're in two different or 7,000 different little islands, and there's no way to get back to each other.
To find each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the use of the phrase make it stop is really interesting to me too, because it brings to mind torture to me. And like, given that this is a war context, I find that interesting, even though I don't think that she's trying to communicate that it's the New Highland Light infantry that's torturing her, but it's that it's the like absolute unbearable weight of being of being forever stuck in these different places and like just not ever knowing what happened to the person that you love the most in the world. Like that is its own special form of torture. And so
that's the consequence to it all, right? That now, because the New Highland Light infantry have arrived, our narrator realizes in that split second that nothing will ever be the same again. And it's like the wave of realization hitting her.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Sucks. Never saw what we could unravel. Like the very fabric of time is unraveled, and then also just like the like relationship that they have and the love, and just it's gone now. Okay, what else here? I was gonna talk about like the sort of double entendre in the traveling light. Never saw what we could unravel in traveling light. But I actually don't know how to, like, because on the one hand, you might think, like, traveling light as in I packed light. I didn't bring much with me.
Yeah, like the light infantry.
Yeah. Or you might think of, like, traveling, you know, we talked for a long time about if you can go faster than the speed of light, then theoretically you could time travel. And so presumably our soldiers have been traveling light. That's why they're called lightborn. But I actually don't know what the first meaning has to do with. Yeah, maybe it is just like the light infantry, like you said, like the.
I would also tie it to like the weight of the decision making. Like there was a certain lightness to deciding to do this, to invest our resources instead of joy in the moment in traveling through time and taking that decision lightly.
Yeah.
And not considering the consequences either intentionally or unintentionally.
Yeah, totally. I like that. Just taking way too lightly.
Yeah. And even if you are considering them, like just not giving enough gravity to them.
Yeah.
Not giving enough weight to them.
Totally. It could also, too, maybe refer to the fact that, like, she's not coming. Like, he's traveling light because she's not there with him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Just the decision for one of them to stay at home rather than for both of them to be doing it together is an interesting one.
And it makes me wonder if they're capable of seeing the consequences of that. Like, never saw what we could unravel. Do you have, and I think the answer is probably no, the capability to see what time travel would do with these, within multiverse theory? Like, do you, is there a way to track that? Probably not.
Yeah. And just like the thought that they couldn't anticipate not having access to time travel anymore. So like whatever happened to take away their ability to time travel, I'm picturing is something that they just couldn't foresee, which makes it sort of all the more mysterious and compelling as to like what it was in the first place that took it away.
Yeah.
Okay. The next line, to be honest, I find very challenging because I don't understand. So I did, the part that I struggle with is how the trip to Debride's like a stack of slides. So to Debride, I think that she's using a double entendre here too. So the definition of Debride's or to Debride is to remove damaged tissue or foreign objects from a wound. Okay. So given that that's the definition, I don't know how to apply it to this. But if it were a play on words, then like I can understand how the trip debrides as in like tears a wife from her husband, right? So like tears the bride from her husband, which I think has happened in our song. But I just don't know how to
debride.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I don't know how to connect the first definition to it. Do you have like a theory about what it would mean to like clean a wound by debridement?
So if we're assuming that, and we are, I'm looking at the definition here, that it's, the definition I have is to remove necrotic tissue or foreign matter from a wound. Mm-hmm. So if we're assuming that we need to remove something negative from the wound, my first assumption was that we are like removing people from time travel because this doesn't work and this can't happen. It's like the thing that needs to be removed are people in this equation. Like we can't go back and change these things. This is not a possible thing. But if we're talking about the relationship specifically, I don't know.
I mean, yeah. The trip debrides. The trip of traveling light debrides. Okay, so that's the first part that I don't understand. I also don't understand like a stack of slides. So how does a stack of slides debride?
Great question.
Yeah.
When I think of a stack of slides, I was thinking of like I guess a few different things. Like I guess when people used to do like slideshows on a projector.
Yeah.
How you would have stacked up kind of like in The Things I Say, she talks about like carrying around memories, like a stack of cards, like a pack of cards. Mm-hmm. So I think I had imagined them similarly, but also like when you use a microscope and you have the different slides, I'm sure you wouldn't stack them up, but.
Why does that debride? Why does that clean the dead tissue out of a wound?
Let me see.
Genius says nothing.
Yeah, no surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, but I like the idea that like the trip debrides as in there's like this wound, maybe a societal wound that like the trip gets rid of like the greediest people maybe, but like I don't know.
So okay, I'm just looking through the Merriam-Webster website here. So we have debride, we have the etymology from French débridement, and then if I click on bridle, which is to like the bridle headgear of a horse,
the bridle bends.
Yeah. But also to restrain, to check, or control. So if we are saying debride, and this is a stretch, maybe it's a play on like a loosening of restraint or control, mm-hmm. or like a letting go of restraint or control. And how our trip in the traveling light was like the ultimate example of no restraint and no control. And because of that lack of control, shit's gone bad. Everything's mm-hmm. gone sideways.
I have a way easier time making sense of that understanding of what it would mean.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's not to bridle.
I know.
Bothers me. But that makes more sense to me than to brides, just because I think it's just like a, one second, sorry. Yeah, I just have like a mental block or something for understanding how the trip can debride in the wound sense.
Oh, God, don't go to the Wikipedia page. No one go to the Wikipedia page.
For debride?
Yeah, and you know what's bugging me is that it seems like there's, for debride specifically, there's only a singular definition.
Yeah.
Right? It can only be used in the removing of bad tissue from
a wound.
So what is the wound? What is the wound?
That's a good question.
What is the wound and what is being removed?
So what is the wound is super interesting, because there's like the interpersonal level. There's like the wound maybe being alluded to between them that like we don't really know about. Or like maybe the wound that like being alive, just like this like existential wound, or like this like colonization wound where like society's fucking broken because we just are so greedy and we've lost track of what we should be holding on to, which is like love and joy. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay. Hang on for a second. Is a wound like the hole that they've torn in space-time trying to fix shit? So if you do a hole in space-time, you get a wormhole. So is it like a wormhole can be visualized as a tunnel with two ends at separate points in space-time, i.e. different locations, different points in time, or both? Theoretically, a wormhole might connect extremely long distances, such as a billion light years, or short distances, such as a few meters, or different points in time, or even different universes. In 1995, Mettwisser suggested there may be many wormholes in the universe if cosmic strings with negative mass were generated in the early universe. I like this because the idea that we have a wormhole connecting our two characters exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it exists regardless of the distance in time or space. That, mm-hmm. like, they could be meters apart. They could be thousands of years apart. They could be 2 days apart. They could be a billion light years apart. And they would never know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's heartbreaking.
Yes, that is heartbreaking.
I also like the idea of cosmic strings with our unraveling.
Yes, totally. I was thinking that when you said string. Yeah, I like this theory, Sam. So, but the wound then
would be the wormhole.
Would be the wormhole. But then the trip somehow cleans the wound?
What
the fuck?
Maybe.
See, man, this line is troublesome. What the fuck is happening? Listeners, what's happening?
Okay, hold on. Let me scan through wormhole Wikipedia for a sec. How to fix a wormhole. Because I feel like the debridement is on the way to fixing something, right? So like maybe the debridement in this context, the debriding is the closing of a wormhole to fix the mistake that was its existence in the first place.
But how does the trip do that then? Like, I love, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm shooting down your theories, but you're giving the best theory. Like, you're doing so much more than I can even start to do with this line here. I am even confused about whether she's saying it's a good thing or a bad thing at all, because I'm like, okay, wound, bad. Debriding, good, because it's stripping the bad shit from a wound. But then it's in the context where she's saying, we never saw this nor this. We never saw what we could unravel, nor did we see how the trip debrides, which makes it seem like a bad thing, right? Because it's being presented to us in the same vein as the shit that they could unravel in Traveling Light. I never saw what we could unravel, nor did I see how the trip debrides. So what is it? Is it a good thing or a bad thing that something is being debrided?
Never saw what we could unravel in Traveling Light or how the trip debrides. I feel like it's this consecutive building of bad things. I feel like it's, we never saw, and maybe it's on different scales. So like, we never saw how this giant thing could unravel, like all of this hard work that we put into trying to change the past and or the future. But we also didn't see how on a smaller scale, this one trip was like the beginning of all that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Very unsure face.
I just, all of these theories are better than what I came into this podcast with. So let's, whatever, something. She meant something. I'm good with going with anything because I just don't know. Okay. I feel like I need to like anchor myself with someone else's thoughts for a second. So, one of the things that I found in researching this line in particular was just a quote from Blessing All the Birds about the stack of slides line. Mm. So at some point in the Delving into Divers, Waltz of the 101st Lightborn, Melissa Martirano writes, the stack of slides image that we see in the penultimate verse of the song is a visualization of the flattening of time and also a visualization of the multiverse. And so I like that. I like the idea that the stack of slides can simultaneously refer to like maybe like a bunch of memories that we all have together, and that's like what this life distills down to, but at the same time be referring to like the multiverse theory where there's a bunch of just like universes stacked on top of each other, which also might speak to like the next line. All we saw that was time is taller than space is wide too. If we just picture all these different multiverses being stacked one on top of each other, that might feed into that.
I like the flattening of time image, just because I feel like that takes us back to something that's easier to understand. Like we have a beginning of life and we have an end of life, and then there's all the shit in the middle. I had this Michael Hicks quote I wanted to read about unraveling too.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. No, about make it stop.
Mm.
So Michael Hicks, at the end of the article, which is called Between Us and Our Ghosts, Understanding Joanna Newsom's Waltz of the 101st Lightborn, which I'm sure we cited a number of times here. And Michael Hicks says, let me find the entire quote here. Confronted by the horror of his doppelganger-esque creation, Frankenstein echoes the singer's regret. We were wrong to try, never saw what we could unravel in Traveling Light. We're no longer in the presence of Percy Bysshe's benevolent Prometheus and man's idle harmony. No, before us rises the fallen creature, the unnatural child of Mary Shelley's modern Prometheus, who dared flout the laws of nature. So I like this because I feel like the comparison to Frankenstein is a really interesting one. And I feel like I think if I understand this correctly, Michael Hicks is comparing it to like who we are before and after time travel. Mm. So that we have now flouted these laws of nature, we are now Frankenstein's monster. We are now like, we are now something that is unnaturally created, and we are different at our most base level from what we were before.
I like that.
I like that too.
So one of the, like, I had told Sam before we started recording that I had like a few all things considered thoughts about this, but it was because of that, Sam, that you just read, like, that Michael Hicks introduces this, or like, for me, brought to light the concept of twinning here, and how I think that on the album it's really important, like throughout the album, but I think on this song in particular is like when it is at least most clearly introduced to me. And so the way that I understood it was, what I had in mind was that in time traveling and in creating these like different timelines and like thus multiverses, thus creating like, sorry, and also creating like the way that things are gonna, what am I saying here? So like that time travel creates like these different realities, and that like we're introduced to the concept of multiverses. And so there's like several different versions of Sam and several different versions of Nikki. I was thinking that like that is twinning. Like that is a way of describing what's going on, is that there is like now several different versions of me because of the different multiverses that exist. And so I was thinking that like in creating that, like if time travel is responsible for that, which it is a big if, but if time travel is responsible for that kind of twinning, then like Frankenstein's monster could be just like these different iterations of Earth and like the different fucking right. versions of us that exist everywhere. Right.
That every repetition, every twin is yeah. itself its own monster because yeah. it's just a copy yes. and like a change. Yeah, that's really cool.
And like it ties into like this simulacridge line too, right? Like it's like sort of just like a simulation of what Earth like originally looked like, but it just like doesn't even resemble the original Earth anymore because it's just been like copied too many times. And so it becomes mm-hmm. like sort of scary in that way, like just disconnected.
Okay, so maybe the debridement is the removal of those Frankenstein universes to heal time.
To, like, stop the fucking chaos of, like, just infinite.
Because in my brain, and this is just my brain compartmentalizing things, it's like Frankenstein universe, bad. Bad because unnatural.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Original universe, good because original universe is natural. There's one of them, whatever. Our DNA stays the same. There's no twins.
Yeah.
We can travel in a straight line, straightforward, simple. But as soon as we start doing all of these things, is that like we are diseasing the universe somehow? Are we yeah. like creating unnecessary infections? Are we
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
are we like I don't know, doing bad things?
Yeah.
Is that bad for like the overall health of right, us right. and the universe? And I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
But then again, and so then the debriding would be like stopping the chaos of that infection, right? Like preventing yeah. the spread of the infection. But then why does the trip do that? Isn't the trip traveling light itself? The fuck is she talking about?
I feel like we're coming to, so our assumption so far is that many of these trips have happened, right? They've happened with light infantry. They've happened with heavy infantry. They've been happening a lot because I feel like, as humans do, once we clasp onto this idea, we're going to take it in 1,000 different directions. So maybe this trip is a tipping point, and maybe this trip is the one where this like universe, the balance is off somehow. And like now we need to get back. I don't know. I'm humanizing this like this universe and saying the universe is like, that's too much.
That's guys. Enough. Yeah.
That's enough. I'm cutting you off here. All of these Frankenstein universes where original people might have existed, like,
yeah,
are gone. I'm cutting you guys off. It's too much. You've lost the plot here.
Well, and now that you say that, I'm thinking, wait, it is true. We just said that in this verse, somehow time travel stops. Mm-hmm. So maybe that the trip to Bri, maybe that's exactly right then. Oh, I found what you said.
A connection.
Yeah, like what you said made me able to make sense of it in a way that I couldn't. So maybe if it's true that something about this last trip where like John, her lover, goes up and away into the sky and then time travel becomes impossible, like we were talking mm-hmm. about. Remember, something about what happens here makes time travel impossible because in the next verse we find out that they're bound to a round desert island. Then that trip in its own way debrides because it stops the spreading of the infection of like these different yeah. worlds and time travels. Mm-hmm. And so if it's mm-hmm. able to like confine things back to not fucking around with multiverses and colonizing multiverses, then maybe that's an explanation. I mean, that's the best that I can do. I still have a million questions about that interpretation because also I'm not like totally clear on how time travel itself gives rise to multiverses. Like if multiverses existed, I feel like they would exist independent of time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because like you don't need
To be able to travel between them.
Yeah, exactly. Like can't multiverses exist just based on like the metaphysics of the universe? Like if I were to have decided today to wear red pants, like, yeah, I don't need to be able to actually travel to the world in which I wear red pants instead of black pants. It's too complicated to talk about. But anyways, that's the best that I can do of making sense of that fucking goddamn line.
Regardless, after all this, she says, all we saw was that time is taller than space is wide.
Yeah.
So all, and I take that as like all that we have left after all of this effort and all of this sacrifice, all of this worry, all of this distance, all of this love, all of this separation, all that we have is the simple fact that we already knew. Did we already know it? I feel like we already knew it. Did she say that before?
Yeah, I feel like this line has come up before.
Yes. As the day is long, so the well one's dry, and we came to see that time is taller than space is wide. So to me, this is like we didn't gain any additional knowledge here.
Yeah. So for me, I think I take this to be like, that's what we saw. Yeah. Like that's what we saw from the beginning when we were hungry for time travel, when we thought it was a good thing. So like, I take her to be saying here that like we were blinded by the idea that time is taller than space is wide. So like we were so compelled to like go colonize. Like, look, we found this whole other way we can colonize. It's not just like the width of space that we were confined to before. We can also like climb up and down these slides and go to different multiverses that we didn't get to explore. And like, holy shit, that's so exciting. And like that excitement blinded them to the fact that we could unravel some serious shit in traveling light and the debridement, which we're not going to get into anymore. But but yeah, like that, like all we saw at the beginning of it all was that time was taller and space is wide, and that fucked us up.
And honestly, I don't know if we can do better than that. I don't know if humans are able to, project possibilities in that way. But it is a very human thing to just act without thinking, to like see purple blueberries, the possibility of purple blueberries on another planet or in another universe, and be like, I want that. And then have that be your one focus, and everything you do is to get the purple blueberries. And then, you know, after all of that effort, it's just like, well, I don't know. Was that worth it?
Especially in like a government/army/masculine context where like,
especially in an aggressive way.
Like I feel like earlier on this song she was like, look, I saw that this was a mistake, but like if you think like, I don't know, in the same way I sort of get the vibes that I get when like the government's about to do something really fucking stupid and it's like there's a bunch of people being like, shouldn't we just like make this not a dick measuring contest and just like settle down for a second and think about like what might happen if we do this? Like, I don't know, invading countries or just like, I don't know, whatever. I'm not going to get into it. But like, yeah, just like that, this enthusiasm, which I think is a nice word for it, for the prospect of.
It's a very gentle word for it, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, this obsession with colonization and just
this curiosity, this lack of perspective taking.
Yeah. All right.
Should I don't feel great about that, but
dude,
we said things.
Oh my God, me either. I don't feel great about that. But like, I knew that that fucking line was going to screw with me for this recording. Ugh, whatever. 45 minutes and we've got nowhere.
Just like this song, though. Just like all we have song. Is that we know time is taller than space is wide.
Oh my God.
Do you want to read the last verse?
I guess so. Okay, so.
I guess so.
All right. So then she sings, "That's why we are bound to a round desert island, 'neath the sky where our sailors have gone. Have they drowned in those windy highlands? Highlands away, my John." All right. So we've talked about the bound to a round desert island line. My understanding of it was that the round desert island is Earth that they are now bound to, which in our narrator's beautiful analogy is an island. And remember we were comparing, I think I had said something last recording session or something, comparing like the bridges that were going on in this song with like between land masses. So like the Bering Strait would connect Asia to North America. And that she then like zooms out and makes, she's talking about metaphorical bridges between like this Earth and like a different Earth in the multiverse. And so I really like here that that line might be alluding to that, that like we're just an island that can either be connected with a metaphorical bridge of time travel to other islands, or without that bridge, we're fucked and stuck in this bound, fucked and stuck to this one continent.
Yeah, our resources are limited. We only have what we have here in this time, in this space, in this moment, in this dimension. And I really like the "neath the sky where our sailors have gone." So we have the memory of where they went. We know they are probably in the sky somewhere, but because we're an island, we have no way to reach them.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that the sky is where the sailors have gone. Like sailors typically refers to water travel. And then she's asking the next line, have they drowned? And so I love this like mixing of elements between air and water. I mean, partly because of that analogy that I was just talking about, but also just like, I don't know, just in and of itself, I like that mixing of not metaphors but elements.
In the Blessing All the Birds post, Lowlands Away and Waltz of the 101st Light Born, Melissa Marchuano says, in literature, according to Barthes, man is often shown, and we've talked about this idea a lot, this is an idea, an OG Melissa Marchuano theory, and I love it. Man is often shown to be active and moving, while woman is often shown to be immobile and attached to a place, i.e., as we have seen, men go to war, women wait. If we expand this behind Barthes's immediate words and also add in a little Simone de Beauvoir and the second sex, to me, means that man is transcendent and woman is immanent. It means that man, in a way, creates memory and woman is the repository of memory, and it means that man is time, something that is constantly moving, and woman is space, something fixed. In Waltz, our female narrator can comment on the motives, apparatuses, and consequences of time travel, but she can never control time herself as she is fixed to the earth. All she can do is watch her earth's dissolution through endless and cyclical copy wars as John always leaves for the highlands. This is exactly the case for the female love in the shanty. So we're referencing Highlands Away. She waits and he leaves, he dies, and then she must become the repository of his memory and never marry again. The reluctance to marry another man because her lover has been lost to sea is reminiscent of the narrator in Divers. So this idea that not only is woman's space something fixed, but that like our space is incredibly limited. We are a desert island now. Mm-hmm. And then this idea that we've talked about before in this song that like we're living this life over and over and over again, that this cycle just keeps going, this cyclical action keeps happening where John is our love and then he's gone and then he's our love and then it's gone. And it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, because it's like in a less literal way, like, so yes, like there is the so like not to get into it again, but like the potential like way in which you relive and you're stuck in a loop if time travel is a thing. Like if the sailors invading our sky were just like older versions of our current selves that are coming back to try to stop time travel from happening, but then we keep replaying that cycle. There's this literal sense in which we're the same person, but there's also this sense in which, like this more metaphorical sense in which the same story keeps replaying. There's just like these different women throughout history who have to stay bound to the same spot while their men go and explore or start wars or do whatever. And the women are just fucking left there time and time and time again. This happens in Divers, the title track. And yeah, just throughout history all the time. And Michael Hicks, I believe, is the person that I will credit for sort of informing me that this actually happened to Percy Shelley. So like the guy who wrote the Ozymandias poem that we focus mostly on, so remember, just like to refresh your guys' memory, that that was Percy Shelley who wrote Ozymandias, the version that is most famous. And he was married to Mary Shelley, who was the author of Frankenstein.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
And Mary Shelley had to endure being the person to stay on whatever land they were on. I think it was England, but I'm not positive. While John, or not John, sorry, while Percy went and explored or went off in a ship. And that's how he died. So, oh yeah, it wasn't England. Well, I don't know where Ligurian is, but in his essay here, Michael Hicks writes, imagine her, so that is Mary Shelley, silhouetted on the Ligurian coastline of July. Her first three children are dead. Not even a month prior, her expected child came stillborn. The clouds of a storm drape like flags unfurled. Her husband, a bad swimmer, has gone sailing and has not returned. So, like, the fact that this actually happened to the author that was, like, pretty much explicitly referenced in Sapochnikan, he went and presumably drowned, but, like, Mary Shelley will never know for sure. In the same way as our narrator in the song, we'll never know for sure what happened to her, John, but he's just, like, drowned in the sky. And so, like, that also makes me think that the reason that she's using the word drown here is to make it more explicitly the same experience as women throughout time have had to endure.
Mm-hmm. Yep, tying it all together.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, in one of the quotes you read, you said something about draped like a flag.
Yeah, Michael Hicks was deliberately referring to the that first verse.
Okay.
Also, this made me think, I started talking about twinning in the last verse and then just lost my train of thought. But this whole fucking time, this whole recording sessions, I keep in the trigger warning saying that we're going to be talking about doppelgangers. And then I just like never talk about it. But I keep literally every recording session, I keep meaning to bring it up. And it's because of that concept of twinning. So like I had said, the multiverse thing happens where like if there are new versions of Earth that are created, then there's this like deliberate process of twinning, of creating new, maybe not deliberate, but it happens that different versions of ourselves are created. And so that's a form of twinning. But what that would mean then is that there are all these different versions of ourself, which brings up the notion of doppelganger. And so again, let me credit Michael Hicks with this little rabbit hole that I went down, but I find this shit fascinating. So just to be clear, because of the twinning, that just gives rise to the idea of doppelgangers, because that means that there's going to be a different version of you out there in the universe somewhere, or in a different universe. Okay, and here's the Wikipedia page entry on doppelgangers, one of the first things it says. So a doppelganger is a biologically unrelated lookalike or a double of a living person. In fiction and mythology, a doppelganger is often portrayed as a ghostly or paranormal phenomenon and is usually seen as a harbinger of bad luck. And so it can often portend someone's death, which obviously is a huge theme throughout our album here, but also like this song in particular. Like as soon as we start twinning, that portends and it like causes, you know, the presumed death of the John in this song. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then when you go to examples of alleged doppelgangers throughout history, under that heading, Percy Shelley comes up, which isn't that a fucking coincidence? Wait, but maybe not.
What does that mean?
Okay, so he comes up because here's the little entry for it. So on July 8th, 1822, Percy Shelley drowned in the Bay of Spezia near Lerici in Italy. Okay, so that answers where he drowned. Okay, but he comes up in the doppelganger post because apparently Mary Shelley said that Percy Shelley claims to have seen his own doppelganger right before he went off, and right as Mary Shelley was having her miscarriage, which was nearly fatal to her too. And so Percy Shelley had a vision of himself right before the like miscarriage and going out to sea example. So presumably
before he died.
And before, yeah, exactly. He died going out to sea. So yeah, exactly. And then it also says in his in one of his written works called Prometheus Unbound, mm-hmm. There is this line. So, ere Babylon was dust, the Magus Zoroaster, my dead child, met his own image walking in the garden. So, doppelgangers abound.
Doppelgangers abound. And the doppelganger as a, as bad luck, as a warning of imminent death.
Yeah.
Do we have... I don't think we have explicit doppelgangers in this song, right? We don't have like, I saw myself.
I don't think so. No.
But we do have, I had a dream that I walked in the garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was there that I called to my true love who was pale as millennial moons.
Yeah.
So we do have then the narrator seeing a doppelganger of her love.
Yeah.
Before his death.
Yes, if we are understanding like the dream version of him as mm-hmm. a doppelganger, but yeah, it is a way of twinning though. The dream people are,
and we do have a war between us and our ghosts. So uh-huh. we do have a war between us and our doppelgangers, and the assumed output of that war is that we're all dead.
Yeah.
Is tragic,
or at least there's a lot of death again.
That's really cool.
I thought so too. And so just the idea of like doppelgangers portending death and time travel just creating more and more doppelgangers is interesting, if it does.
And then I also, with the debriding, like the idea that maybe there's like a capacity to how many doppelgangers the universe can hold. And that, like, the debriding part happens, I forget what the fuck we said about it before, but when that capacity is met or something.
Like, when we're at full capacity of, like,
yeah,
no more universes can be created.
Yeah, when in the same way when the universe is, like, you're cut off.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep leaning back from the microphone. I'm terrible at doing that.
But one thing I saw on the Wikipedia page that got me sort of excited and makes me want to read more is that, like, pretty much all of my favorite authors or, like, very noteworthy authors have some sort of writing about doppelgangers. So we have like the Shelly doppelganger thing. We have, I'm going to butcher this name, but like Jorge Luis Borges, the Argentinian writer, has... Have you read anything by him, Sam?
I don't think so.
He's so fucking good. This is the Argentina episode of the podcast because I know about him because my partner is super into him. And he just writes so beautifully and like often in like a science fiction-y kind of vein. I don't know if that's the right classification for him, but honestly, like one of my favorite writers ever. He's so good. But anyway, he has a book or a short story, I'm not sure, but about doppelgangers. Nabokov has one about a doppelganger. Dostoevsky. So yeah, it makes me excited to sort of explore that potential wormhole.
Interesting. And I wonder, like, if that idea of doppelgangers is only applied to humans or if it can be applied to physical spaces as well. Like, if you are traveling through time and you see a doppelganger of your space, does that portend your death as well?
I don't know. How...
Google's not going to tell me.
I mean, presumably, well, actually, I shouldn't presume this. I was going to say, presumably, like, if there's a replica of Earth that you then go to, that you're going to be in that second Earth too. But, like, who knows? It could just be an Earth that never had you born. So, yeah, I don't know. This is going to be, I think, confusing to come out loud, but I just had, like, a kind of realization where it's, I was wondering before, like, how... Like, if time travel doesn't itself create the multiverse, then, like, what relevance does twinning have here? Because it's not actually creating the different multiverses. It just, like, lets us visit the different multiverses. But I had a little, like, tiny realization to myself that might not make sense to anybody and thus makes for a very bad audio content thing. But that... Oh, no, time travel doesn't create the twinning, but it does create us encountering our doppelgangers. It is the thing that lets us have that bad luck, which we never would have had before. Those things would have been kept separate and tidy in their own little universes.
Right. So it opens up a door that wouldn't have otherwise been opened. Yeah. It opens us up to these possibilities, to more possibilities of encountering our doppelgangers, and because of that, encountering death.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a much clearer
Again, way of consequences it. That we that our characters did not consider before hopping on the time traveling warship.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Have we talked about Highlands Away? Did we talk about that song last time?
I don't think so.
It's an old sea shanty. In that one, I think the actual line is Lowlands Away, my John. Highlands Away isn't the sea shanty. Lowlands Away is the sea shanty. I have a memory of talking about it because we were talking about how like the sky makes it so that it's the highlands, but that was in my head.
Honestly, we recorded a few weeks ago, so we could have entirely talked about it.
Yeah.
I felt like we saved it. Okay. But that might just be because I was looking at my notes, and I didn't write very much about it.
Here are the lyrics that I have for it. I'll just read them real quick. Mm-hmm. I dreamed a dream the other night. Lowlands away, my John. My love, she came all dressed in white. Lowlands away. I dreamed my love came in my sleep. I think we talked about this in the New Highlands Light Infantry because we were talking about how like...
Maybe we did.
Yeah. Okay.
You can look it up.
Yeah, you can look it up.
If you want to read more specifically about it too, Melissa and Rachel have a post on Blessing All the Birds called Lowlands Away and the Waltz of the 101st Lightborn. That's a great read, as always. I like the idea of, we might have touched on this too, so one of the notes in this article is, shanties were used by sailors as a way to pass time while they were working on the open sea. They developed completely from the oral tradition and evolved, transformed, and merged with other shanties. So we've talked a lot about, like, and we will continue to talk in the things I say about memories and how memories are perceived and carried with us and all of that. But that sea shanties specifically, that shanties specifically are an oral tradition, is something that I think pertains to our narrator here, right? That we have said that women are the carrier and the carriers and the organizers of these memories. And our narrator here is doomed to not only experience this same experience over and over again of losing her partner to the sea, to space, to wherever, but is doomed to carry those memories with her forever.
Yeah.
And I guess I think that's interesting because I would imagine that that's an oral tradition among women here too, that like those, one of the reasons those memories are so sticky, that they stick with us, stick with our narrator so much, is because they are shared. And historically, that has been something that has been shared among women.
Yeah, 100% yes. Yeah, one other thing that I saw about the Round Desert Island line is that it's a desert island, which is kind of weird because Earth, like, is traditionally like a green, verdant place. But someone that I was reading, I think on Genius, was speculating that it's a desert island because, like, they've depleted their resources on this one Earth.
Which we talked about.
Yeah, exactly. Which might have like motivated. That was
the motivation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also deserted, that they are deserted there, that they have been left behind.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's the place that, they've been deserted. Oh, the women get deserted.
Yeah.
And then the only other.
Over and over again.
Over and over again. And then the only other note I have for this verse is the specific naming of John, which I think I saw from Blessing All the Birds, that naming in this album is really significant and that it's John specifically, and that we get the name John again specifically mentioned in Sapokonokan with John Perry Mitchell might speak to that, like, look, it's the same experience, like, across time, like, across songs, it's like the Johns go up and away into the sky to explore while the woman character, the narrator in our case, is bound to the earth.
That is all I have.
That is all I have too. Yeah, that's it.
And everyone.
And everyone.
Thank you so much for bearing with us as we ever so slowly work our way through the now 8 episodes on Waltz of the 101st Lightborn. We're going to be talking about The Things I Say later this week. So if you have big feelings, small feelings, big or small thoughts, theories, questions, please send them our way. We would love to hear from you. You can reach out to us. The best way is through email. Our email is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. You can also send us a DM or comment on something, one of our pictures on Instagram. Our Instagram is A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. What else can you do, Nikki?
You can go to the Patreon, patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor. There you can find early episode releases and bonus episodes. Sam and I are about to record a bonus episode. I think it'll be bonus episode 19, so we have quite a few up there now. What else? We have a Facebook group, A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. You can rate and review us if you want. That allegedly helps to expose our little podcast to more ears. I think that's it. So yeah, you guys, we really appreciate you being here. If you still are, we struggled with parts of this song, but we hope that you guys enjoyed the struggle. I don't know.
We also wanted to say thank you to everyone who I don't know. We Nikki shared the Spotify Wrapped. I'm just looking for the pictures now so I can say things about it. And it was so very sweet to be able to see how many of you are listening to us and sharing and all of the countries that we are in. I can't find the pictures now that describe what those statistics were, but that's okay. We posted them on Instagram.
And it was just, it was so sweet to, it was such a heartwarming thing to go through that people share a podcast and listen to it. And yeah, so yeah, like Sam said, we do just want to extend a thank you to everybody. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Oh, here it is. Yeah, that 535 of you have us in your top 10 podcasts. Aww, what an honor.
What an honor.
That's amazing. And my favorite one was that your listener's podcast personality was the devotee.
I know, I love that.
I was like, yeah, that would be Joanna Newsom fans. Yeah. 100%. Because I do that with everything. Oh my God. Are you guys listening to the new... oh my God, the new Fever Ray album. There's only two songs out so far, and it is, speaking of devotee, it is the, there's two songs, and it's the only thing I've listened to for weeks. I did take a brief hiatus because I remembered The Tallest Man on Earth exists, and that's like a beautiful thing to listen to in the winter. I said to Nikki, like, oh my God, I forgot about these albums. This is great. But Fever Ray's back, and they've blessed us with... Two songs. And the album's forthcoming, so yay.
Let's be devoted to it together, too.
Great news, yeah.
All right, thank you guys so much. Bye.
Bye.